If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
There are just so many ways that people shoot themselves in the foot and could raise so much more money so much more easily just by using better words.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
When it comes to scaling up to bigger deals, it's all about having access to the capital you need. And when it comes to raising money, Brian Ellis is one of a handful of top pitchmen in the investing world. His clients include some of America's biggest names in syndication, and those clients return to him repeatedly for the one skill where nobody matches him, in the crafting of wildly persuasive scripts for webinars, videos, and other capital raising presentations.
Hey, Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's great to be with you.
Brian, let's jump in, man, and really just dig into this. I mean, you got a niche skill, obviously. You get paid handsomely for it. Tell us all the dirty details that just, you know, make this go round.
Your brain doesn't work the way you think it does. And your investors' brains don't work the way you think they do.
Okay.
Here's what everybody thinks. If you've ever watched a capital pitch webinar, we've probably all seen a million of them at this point.
Sure.
Here's what they all are. You'll recognize this right away. There's a title slide. There's probably one or two or three or four or five, however many central partners there are, photos of the main partners, probably on that first slide or in the second or third slide at least. There's probably a big paragraph of information about the background of each one of those members of the partnership. And then the rest of the presentation is a logical presentation about here's what the project is, here's how much it takes, here's how much money you're going to make, here are the spreadsheets that prove it's true, here's where it's going to happen, and this is why that's a good area. And you know what? That doesn't work. Doesn't work very well. And here's my evidence for that. Very routinely, most of my clients, when they come to me the first time, the second and subsequent times, they're a little smarter about it. But the first time they come to me, most of them are in a situation where they're 7 to 10 days out of their drop dead date. They have to close in 7 to 10 days. They're several million dollars short. They don't know what they're going to do. They've already raised several million dollars, usually from their own list or something like that. But they're several million short still, and they don't know what they're going to do. So what I do is I go in and I take the information about their project. I rewrite it in such a way that it actually speaks to your mind and the mind of your potential investors in the way that your mind works, the way your mind actually works. And what invariably happens is that my presentation in a single shot or in maybe one repeat performance over a day or two raises as much or more from the same group of people that the syndicator had already raised from that they thought was a dead list. And we do that over and over and over again. Now, how could we do that? Well, the big reason why is I know how your brain works, and it's not logical, but there is a process, a method to it. And that's what we use whenever I create a presentation.
So, you know, I mean, you say that we follow a logical, you know, a lot of these follow a logical presentation flow. Yeah, I'm guilty. We just did it. We just did a raise, and mine followed pretty much that.
Yeah.
We got the deal done. But,
yeah, sure.
But what are some ingredients then that are missing, maybe, that you suggest we should have?
Well, at a very high level, you've got to understand that logic is one of the later factors that people use whenever mm-hmm. they make a decision.
Sure.
And what do all presentations you've ever seen do? They always lead with logic. Well, here are the members of the team. Here are their backgrounds. Here's why you should trust them. Let's think about that. And just that part for a second. Let's say there are two or three or four people who are the primary managers of your team. And by the way, I'm not suggesting that the way the logical, purely logical, very stepwise method won't work at all. It will work to a degree, but just not very efficiently. Because if you think about it, just that issue of introducing who the primary members of the team are, does that really matter at that moment? Like, does the person who has come to hear about that opportunity, did they come to hear primarily because that person was running the deal? Now, they may have if you have a group of dedicated investors, But if any of your target audience are people who don't know you and don't trust you yet, did they come to hear you or about you? Well, yeah, but that's not really why they're there. Was there excitement over hearing about this deal because they wanted to work with you or because they wanted the result that you could produce? Well, it's kind of a hard thing for our egos to take, but we're not the story as the syndicator. We're not the story. The opportunity for them to profit is the story. So why would we even talk about who the primary team members are until, while we're going through the presentation naturally as a story more than as a recitation of fact? At various points, the different members of the management team are going to be relevant to that story. Why not tell their story really briefly during the presentation when it actually makes sense? Well, that's just a really small thing to consider. But what you're doing whenever you start off with something that's really kind of boring, I mean, like, let's just be honest, it's boring to read somebody's background or hear about somebody's background. You're putting yourself at a disadvantage because they're not really fascinated with that information. Sure. Why not instead just pick out two or three really fascinating things about your project and start with those in a really punchy way? Hey, today we're going to, there are three really fascinating facts that I want to share with you about this project right now. And they are this thing, this thing, this thing. And you go through them in 30, 45 seconds at worst, but now you've got them hooked. And if you do those things correctly, by the way, it's going to leave a hole in their head open, so to speak, that has to be filled later on, and you're not going to lose them. There are a lot more things just like that, a lot more techniques that one can use. But if you just make your presentation in a way that hooks them and then keeps rehooking them, and then, oh, by the way, uses the fact that there's psychology that applies to everybody, like we all want what we can't have. That's called scarcity. If you use that correctly and some other psychological principles, what you'll find is that you're able to raise money a lot more quickly from a much broader audience because you're speaking to their brain the way their brain thinks.
That's really interesting. You know, what other avenues do you kind of use this method with other than webinars and like, I guess, yeah, other than webinars, do you cover printed material? Do you cover, I mean, what other mediums do you use this on?
We really focus pretty heavily on webinars and video-based presentations. Mm. In the COVID era, webinars have become infinitely more important than anything else. You know, pitch decks aren't as relevant as they used to be, and other types of literature, and they may be really valid again in the future, but right now, webinars are the game.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And I would assume, you know, the type of stuff that you're creating would be for deals that are 506C, you know, publicly advertised deals, because I think a B raise, typically people are going to know you a little bit more intimately, or is that not the case?
Well, yes and no. A B raise does require that you have a relationship with the investor before you pitch them.
Sure.
But we can build presentations that are for 506B projects. It's just that we have to put at least one other step in the process. I have an entire five-step process that I follow and that I occasionally teach. And one of those steps is whenever we're doing a 506B, that we have to insert like essentially another meeting, another way to establish and clearly document a relationship. Mm-hmm. But for 506C, yeah, it's a lot simpler.
Right. Yeah, I would imagine. How did you figure this out?
Trial and error. There are really two parts to this. One of them is the persuasion part of the strategy, and that is using the specific words to use to make a presentation. You see, when I work with a client, what they end up with is a PowerPoint presentation, sure, but they also end up with a word-for-word script for what to say at every moment of every second of that presentation. And that part of it, the scripting part of it, I learned over the course of many years standing on stages where I had to sell things, and if I didn't sell, I didn't get to come back next week. And I learned it through the course of having done many, many raises myself and for many clients along the way. So what I do right now is probably 75% the same thing that I did 5 or 6 years ago, but gotten a little bit better even since then. So I learned it through experience, and sometimes sometimes learning some hard lessons. But overall, I got this thing figured out.
Right. So are you actively syndicating deals or actively investing in real estate at this point, or are you working just alongside of syndicators?
So I do a couple of things. this service where I create persuasive presentations for syndicators, that's my business. That's the active thing that I do for my business.
Right.
And that doesn't necessarily involve my raising money for anybody. That's me writing a presentation for them and them going and using that presentation however they see fit. There's another side to my business where I do assist in capital raising. And in those projects, I always end up taking an ownership interest of some sort. So in that way, yes, I am actively building my portfolio, but I don't do it in the same way everybody else does.
Right. Right. That's fascinating. That's fascinating. So what are some other mistakes you see people making other than the way that they're laying it out? And maybe, I don't know, maybe we could take this 100 different directions, but the way that they're laying out, the words they're using, I mean, what are some psychological or some tips and tricks we could use?
Just about every conventional webinar has a spreadsheet in it somewhere. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not a full spreadsheet, it's, you know, 5, 6, 7 columns and 10 or 12 rows. Almost always, you can reduce that thing down to two numbers, the one in the upper left and the one in the lower right, or maybe the one in the lower left and the one in the lower right. All the stuff in the middle, that's what ought to be in the PPM. Mm-hmm. There's no reason in the world that needs to be in the webinar. And that's for two reasons. One of them is that there's no way they can read it. If you're on that slide long enough for them to read it, they're not listening to you. Mm-hmm. And the second reason that is at least as important as the first is that it is really likely that even if your data is totally correct, that they will misread something. Because no matter what, there's going to be a limited amount of time that they can review that information. They might misread or misunderstand something, and that does nothing to help you. Mm-mm. So why not make it easier? Instead of saying, in year one, the return is this. Year two, it's this. Year three, it's this. Why not say, we start here, and after year five, you've gotten a 230% return on equity. That's much cleaner. That also gives them something they can take home to their wife or to their husband. That's a number that their wife or their husband can understand, but they can't understand any of the stuff you put in that spreadsheet.
Right.
That's just one little thing that you can do differently.
Yeah, that's funny. It's funny you say that. I was having a conversation with a potential investor the other day, and we started talking, and then we got into IRRs and some other stuff, and suddenly I just saw the eyes glaze over, and I'm like, you have no idea what I'm talking about, do you? I was like, okay. So you're absolutely right. Like, keep it simple.
Yeah,
keep it simple.
Yeah. The more you can really help them to see this is how much you put in and this is how much you get out and here's how much time elapses, the closer it is to that, better off you're going to be.
Right. Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. What else could we be doing?
Well, a lot. One of the things is a change of attitude about, note that this isn't specific to you, obviously.
Probably
because I haven't seen any of your presentations. So
I'm sure it applies. It's okay. You can use me as the guinea pig.
But so a lot of people, whenever they do capital raises, they are justifiably concerned that they are going to fail to raise the money. Mm-hmm. Right? And that comes through. And it comes through generally sounding something like the minimum investment is $100,000 and we need $5 million. And if you want to invest $50,000, you can, but we really prefer $100,000. And we've got to have the money by a certain date. And if you're interested, call me here. That's a fairly typical way that people close these things. That's the wrong way. Here's kind of a rough example of the right way. Let's say you're raising $5 million, $100,000 at the time. Here's how I think about that. $5 million divided by 100,000, that's 50, right? And let's say that I've got 150 people on the webinar or registered for the webinar, whatever. What I'm going to say is something like, and this is a $5 million project. You've got to understand that a $5 million project is a very, very small project. And then I would give them a list of other projects that I've done or other projects that other people have done that are much bigger than that. So $5 million is a very small project. And we're accepting investors $100,000 at the time. That means I've got room for only 50 investors. There are, by the way, there are over three times that many people registered to be on the webinar right now. So you really need to take action if this is something that you would like to participate in. And by the way, this is not a first come, first serve. This is not a situation where you get to play just because you have the money. There are three requirements. One of them is that you have to have their money. The second requirement is you have to be accredited. And the third requirement is that you and I or a member of my team have to have a one-on-one conversation because we're going to be working together the next 3 to 5 years. We got to make sure that we are a good fit for each other. And if we're not a good fit, it doesn't matter how much money you've got, we won't take it. And by the way, I always get the question of, can I invest more in this project than $100,000? And the answer is maybe. That's on a case-by-case basis. You have to bring that up with the member of the team that you speak with. But I can't assure you of that because we expect that the demand for this opportunity is going to be very, very high. There are only 50 spots available. So how does that sound versus the conventional way of doing it?
It sounds a lot better.
Yeah. So that's another example. And we could go on and on and on. I mean, there are just so many ways that people shoot themselves in the foot and could raise so much more money so much more easily just by using better words.
Words are important. Words are important. What have you been able to help people when they're at the finish line and they don't have their raise ready? They're not making it. They're not getting it done. And yeah. are you the golden parachute that they go, gosh, thanks, Brian, or is it just it's a dumpster fire and sorry about your luck?
Whenever my clients come to me for the first project, almost invariably they're 7 to 10 days out, maybe slightly more than that, but they're a very short period of time before they have to close. They have no choice. It's all done. They don't have any more choice in the matter. They've got to close in 7 to 10 days. They've also already hit their database as hard as they know how. You know, they probably got an email list and they've made a webinar of their own. They've hit that database over and over, and they probably have raised several million dollars already, but they're still several million short. That's usually when I get the call, at least the first time a client works with me. And what we do is very simple. I take the information about their project. This is why my fee is so high, because we do this all in one day. I get together with them. I ask them a million questions about their project. I look at all the stuff that they've already created about their project. I then go away on that same day. I write a new script and create a new presentation that's ready by the next morning. And we then run that presentation, my new presentation, to the same database that they've already been targeting, the one that they think is dried up already. And invariably, we raise a lot of money, frequently more than they raised the first time through, even though we are going to what they consider to be a dead database because they've already hit it so hard. Well, why would that work? It's because I speak to your brain the way your brain actually works. It's not logical. See, this is kind of a strange analogy, and some people will go, "Ooh, I don't know," but trust me, I'm right. The analogy is this. The way most people do it is the way that a professor does it, okay? The way that I do it is more like a really skilled attorney giving a closing argument. And you know what I'm talking about, the one you see on TV that the words just flow off of their tongue, and when it's all done, you can't help but say, yes, that's the difference.
Right. No, that's good. That's good. I like all that. So what does it look like? I know you said that the process with you, somebody comes on board, you review, ask them a million questions, review all their materials, and then the next morning, they wake up and you've got it all done and it's ready. You know, they've got to hit, probably record the webinar and then, you know, go do it.
Yep.
Go do it. And that's the sum of the services on that side of things that you offer.
Well, yeah. I mean, one other thing I generally do in that case is that I also write for these clients, an email campaign.
Right. That's what I was going to ask about.
Because I can also tell you that it is pretty much universally the case that I get at least the very best experience they've ever had in terms of registration, and frequently much greater than that, because the same thing is true for emails as is true for webinars. The words matter. So I also write a three or four email series that they can send out, and I tell them when to send it and that sort of thing. So that's also part of what we do for clients.
Right. Right. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. And you just build this out by the day.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, And you know what? We started doing that because most of the clients that were coming to me, at least for their first project, there wasn't any other option. Like when you're 7 days out, like there's not room to take 2 or 3 days.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm. No, there's not. No, when it's closing time, you're down to the wire at 7 days. I mean, even if you get people to sign up, and then by the time just the documents fiasco, I don't care how organized you are, the documents fiasco is always a fiasco.
Yeah, absolutely. You're not wrong about that. So I have a complete process that I show my clients, and you know, I don't require that they follow it, but I strongly recommend it. And when they do, that tends to work out a little bit more smoothly because I've For everybody who has done a syndication or two or even 10, I've still been involved in a whole lot more than that. And so we're able to, in a lot of ways, help make sure that the bumps get ironed out before they ever happen.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Brian, I've enjoyed this thoroughly. Let's jump here into the final four and let's find out what you have to say about this. And this we'll keep this, you know, all surrounding what you do. So what is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Focus on cash flow. And don't believe that just because there is an asset class that you invest in, that that's necessarily the best asset class.
I like that. I like that. What is one thing you are currently doing to stay on top of your game?
Oh, I spend a whole lot of time comparing my results to the results that my clients get and make sure that I'm able to beat them handily. I also, as a very routine matter, every time I do one of these projects, I take a moment after it's all done and go back and see what went well, what went badly, and then try to hone down my process a little bit to make it even better.
Right, right. When it comes to giving back, what is one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
Well, this is something that's kind of uncomfortable for me to talk about, but let's just say I give a lot of money to some things that really matter to me. Some kids that don't eat and they get to eat now. I'll put it like that.
Right. That's really cool. Good for you. Good for you. Brian, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Best way is just to send me a text at 678-888-4000. That will get you on my list in case you are interested in my helping you with your syndication. Or there's kind of one other reason to do it too that we didn't really talk about. And that is that because I see so many projects, I kind of get a cut or get a shot at the best of the best of them. And so I share those projects with the folks on my list from time to time. So if you'd like to see those, just drop me a text at 678-888-4000, and I'll be happy to share them with you.
That's awesome. Brian, thanks so much for your time today. I certainly learned a lot. I do appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.